Welcome to Avery Ventures Podcast. I'm Ryan Avery.
And I'm Tanya Avery.
It's been a minute. It's been about 8 months since we've been on a podcast, and we've been bugged a lot to get back at it.
Well, I'm not saying that we were, like, banned or anything, because that may or may not be a true fact, but just saying we're back.
We're back. 8 months. Everybody's been jacked up with COVID, but we have an awesome guest today. We have Ryan Furman. If you don't know Ryan Furman from the Rockside Side angle, he wrote a few articles for us, and he's also the big time contributor at Long Range Only. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Well, I appreciate you having me. I look forward to talking with you for however long it takes.
what's your actual title at Long Range Only? Do you have one?
I don't know. I think I'm just one of the long range gear editors at the time, or at the moment right now. It's just Daniel, Jeff, and I, anyways, as the actual contributors to the site, other than obviously the forum members' input. I've been doing that for a couple of years. I don't remember exactly when Jeff contacted me, but it's a good outlet for my gear testing.
How so fun! It's good. How I guess first of all, tell us a little bit about how you got, if you want to go into your job, that's fine, but tell us a little background how you got into shooting.
Well, I'll try to make it as quick as possible. I've been hunting since I was a kid. Started off deer hunting here in Kansas. Back when I was a little kid, there weren't a whole lot of them. The population's exploded over the years, but I don't really like the style here. Most of the guys are pushing draws and they're shooting running deer, and it just didn't suit me. So I actually swapped over to waterfowl hunting for quite a few years. Actually, was kind of a chance deal. One time I was at Walmart grocery shop and I picked up Eastman's Hunting Journal. It happened to have like a sample MRS section in it. Mm-hmm. And so I started reading it, and I went ahead and bought the magazine, took it home. I had no clue that there was public land out west that a guy could go hunt. And I'm a little bit embarrassed to say it, but that's the fact. I started doing some research, and then a couple buddies and my dad and I went antelope hunting. And obviously we all know that, as your skills get better, you can get close to a lot of animals. But it was very quickly obvious to me that the better your shooting skills were, the higher your odds of success were going to be. So I came back home. We immediately started. We ended up killing a couple pronghorn, nothing trophy size. They were actually pretty small, but we were pretty pumped about doing it ourselves, doing it on public land. And we came back home. We immediately started preparing for the next hunt. And I knew that my rifle situation wasn't going to be something that was going to work out long term for what I was after. And it's just grown from there. The more I hunt, the more I've kind of whittled down the rifle that I want, the ballistics that I want, the energy that I want. And then obviously, as I've gained experience, I've seen some preference for me in what bullets I desire to shoot. So I think a couple of those issues I just touched on will kind of fall right in with the topics that you're wanting to discuss today. So yeah, I don't think I've got the perfect rifle for me figured out, and I don't think that there is one cookie cutter that fits everyone's needs. So that amount of time, it's ridiculous the options we've gained. I remember when I first built my first custom rifle, there was only a couple actions out there, a couple barrel makers, maybe five. You had to wait a year for a barrel. The stock options were pretty limited. So some of these guys getting into the game right now are very lucky, and I obviously they're going to take a lot of things for granted, but it's awesome to have all those options.
It is, and I would not be embarrassed about the public land thing, because when I was in the Army, people had no idea. Everything was leased. They had no idea you'd come out west and just buy a tag in a state and go hunt on public land.
So, Ryan, what year did you say that was that you discovered that and came out with your family?
I want to say it was probably 2009 when I picked up that magazine. And I'll turn those off. It's probably 2009 when I picked up that magazine, and I think we came on our first hunt in 2010. So it's been roughly 10 years, going on 11 years I've been doing public hunts out west. And with my job, some years have been better than others as far as the number of hunts I've been able to go on. I've tried to fill a couple of those hunts in on certain years with Africa hunts, just due to my work schedule.
For sure. And before that, when did you start hunting? Were you hunting as a kid with your family and all that, like a lot of people?
Yeah, I was probably 6 when I picked up my first rifle. Would have been an old 22 single shot my dad had. We were just out shooting tree rats, but I was hooked the second I shot something. I mean, it's just grown since. You know, I see a lot of kids that are just not really interested in it, and no matter how much you try to get them involved, they just don't want to do it. But I've just gotten worse and worse. it's gotten probably maybe a little bit too much, but I enjoy it. I live for it. I'm planning for it every day. It's something to look forward to.
And you're out of Kansas.
That's correct. Eastern Kansas. It's the flatlands of Eastern Kansas.
So on that note, before we jump into like the battle of the 30s, how does a flatlander and long range hunting, how do you work around that? Because you can't go to the mountains for wind. You can't go to the local, you know, big game shoot that's out in the actual mountains that you're going to be shooting in. How do you get ready for a hunt where you could take an 8 or 9 or 1,000 yard shot in the mountains?
Well, that's actually a really good question for a lot of people that are in the same boat as myself. I think big picture wise, it probably causes me to not take a lot of shots that maybe some of you guys out west would. I know a lot of guys don't want to maybe admit that, but that is also long range only's motto. We do long range right. We don't take the shots that we know we can't make. And you and I have talked about this several times in the past, Ryan, but I fully expect to hit the target when I pull the trigger. So if I don't see the bullet impact the animal, then something's gone wrong. I'm severely caught off guard. But back to the original question, there's some draws here in some of the places we do shoot. I have to avoid doing load development in those because they will push the bullet all over the target. The wind actually does not just blow across them left to right or right to left. It actually will push the bullet up or push it down. So we do some practicing in those spots. But most of our spots we do load development in, like crop fields, bean fields, corn fields. The only thing they really have is a left to right wind, and it's not really hard to judge because if the kestrel's telling you 10 miles an hour at your shooting location, it's most likely 10 miles per hour at the target, and you just dial and shoot. Whereas a lot of those western shots where it's going over terrain, that's not always the case. You actually have to read vegetation, read the mirage, and those types of things. So it is tough to get the kind of practice I think you guys get out there, and like I said, it kind of just limits my shots. I typically won't take a shot if the winds are switching and if it goes much over 10 miles an hour.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that also, I'll kind of jump into your accuracy threshold, I guess I'll call it. To me, and this may be a detriment to me, I guess, I don't really know. If I can get a gun 5/8, half inch at 100, I'm moving on. And you're a point, what are you, 0.3, quarter inch kind of guy?
Yeah, I'm not probably going to settle for the load, I would say. I've gotten past, for the most part, using production rifles. There's some higher end production rifles we still play with. We still do reviews on. I put a plug in here for Christensen Arms. They make great sub $2,000 rifles, and they're capable of doing what I want. But if I can't get a rifle, so we got to be clear and honest here. A rifle that does quarter minute, I don't know, 70% of the time, is still going to throw some half-minute groups. So I'm not going to sit here and tell somebody. Matter of fact, I'll tell you you're lying if you've got a rifle that you can hunt with and kill elk with and shoot prone quarter minute all day, every day. That just doesn't exist from prone field positions. But when I'm in a controlled situation, I'm doing load development, I'm getting a rifle that will shoot quarter minute pretty much every time. And the way I do my load development is either with a ladder test or an optimal charge weight test. So I'm not chasing a tune, which I really think, kind of based on our conversations, kind of what you're doing. I'm not going to sit there and tune it. If it comes out of tune one day and it's shooting half-minute groups, I know I have confidence in the way I did my load development that that load is going to withstand several different conditions. But I guess it's kind of a wishy-washy answer. But when I'm doing load development, the way I do it, I know that I'm in the middle of a wide node. I stay in the center of it for those conditions. I know that it's going to change. The groups are going to open up as conditions change, but I know they're not going to open up enough to cause me to miss. And I practice all the time clear out to depending on what fields I have, because I'm shooting in bean fields. I practice out to 1,000 yards on a regular basis. So I know that those loads are holding up. I know that the rifles are holding up. I know that the zero's holding up. I know that the scopes are still dialing. And I place a high importance on that because I know that I'm going to give up some in the department we were just talking about with the wind calls and stuff. So I really feel like the smaller I can get my group aggregates, the better off I'm going to be at hitting the deer in a pit poor wind call.
Yeah, and you do your ladder test a little different, and I believe you did an article on long range only, if I'm not mistaken, on it.
Yeah, I've got it's my preferred. So we've got a video out there on how I do it. It's really not a lot different than others, but I don't believe in the one shot, and I don't think that three is necessary, because I think that two shots per powder charge actually give you the data you need. If I don't get the data I need, I don't try to justify it. I don't try to redo it. I just move on to a different powder combo and call it good. I've never had more than two attempts to get that done. But I know that kind of comes back into the question I was just answering. I know when I see three different powder charges, usually that's what I'm striving for. In the worst case scenario, two different powder charges that are impacting the relatively, so those are the same place on the target at 1,000 yards. We're talking like typically under a half minute that load will be stable in different conditions. And it's proven itself over years in several different rifles. I've lost count. But I found the same thing with the optimal charge weight. The only difference is optimal charge weight. There's been a couple times where a combo works great at 100 yards that might not work as great as at 1,000 yards. So if you are doing an optimal charge weight, in my opinion, you've got to do an extra step to go out and prove that at distance, whereas a ladder at 1,000 yards, it's already proven itself. When I'm done with a ladder and I'm done with seating depth test, I'm kind of in the boat that you are. I'll just shoot that until it starts. If it starts doing something ugly on the target, I'll try to diagnose it, but I rarely have run into that.
Do you start, like, where do you... I'm not going to lie, I haven't watched the video because I pretty much have my way down to what I think is a science, so...
Yeah, I think if you've got a system that works, there's really no – I mean, unless you just want to try new stuff, then by all means watch it. It was really geared towards people that always ask us, where do you start, how do you start? And actually the biggest question that I get is someone will go shoot groups and they'll get a lucky, you know, one-tenth group or a quarter-minute group, but it won't repeat. So they are always asking why, and it's really just that. It's because they got lucky. Right. The optimal charge weight and the ladder test kind of rule that out.
Your optimal distance is what for your ladder test?
Ladder test, I would it's 1,000 yards. But if
that's
you have
insane.
If you have a lot of crosswinds, it's not going to work because you will start seeing aerodynamic jump. The point of a ladder, we can get way into the weeds on this. To me, a ladder test, you're looking for vertical.
Right.
Typically, once you get a tight vertical and it's got huge horizontal, it's usually caused by seating depth. But if you've got a 10-mile-an-hour crosswind and you're trying to shoot a 1,000-yard ladder, you're going to see aerodynamic jump, and that's going to give you both horizontal and vertical, and it's going to destroy your results. So there is no need for it. I wouldn't do a ladder test the way I do it less than 600 yards because a lot of these rifles we shoot are so accurate that if you go to 400 or 500 yards, you're just going to get garbage data because the bullets are going to stack on top of each other.
Right. No, I think it's kind of ingenious because you're taking out a calculation to where you jump to verification and you take it out to 800 or 900 yards and you aren't accurate, then you're kind of starting back at square one. So I always bitch about ladder tests as wasting bullets, but doing it at distance makes more sense to me than doing it at 100 yards.
Yeah, 100 yards. I use what people will call a ladder test for pressure testing. Mm-hmm. But you can't – I got to be careful with my words. I would say 50% of the time, if you shoot 10 or 12 consecutive powder charges at 100 yards and you got three of those bullets that are consecutive powder charges in the same hole, mm-hmm. 50% of the time, that load's going to work for you. But the other 50%, and I'm obviously just throwing numbers out there. It could be 40, it could be 60. But the other 50%, you're just going to get luck. Statistically, at some point, bullets are going to stack in the same hole, although it was just a fluke. Those are the types of guys that we always get. They always private message me, DM me on Instagram, whatever, start threads that say, mm-hmm. I did this and now my load won't shoot. Well, that's just because... statistically you got lucky, and there's a couple guys out there on the internet that are promoting those kinds of things, and it's just perpetuated itself, and I just don't believe in it. Now I do that on a new combo, new rifle, new powder, new bullet I've never tried, so that I cannot waste my time walking or driving down that 1,000 yards to do a ladder to try to figure out where my top of my powder charge is going to pressure out. It does save some time if you're new to a combo. But if you're doing a 300 Win Mag, we all know that somewhere between 73 grains and 77 grains H1000 with a 215 burger is probably going to yield you some accuracy. So I would just skip straight to the ladder test in those cases.
On kind of jumping off that, when you brought up the burgers, and I'll put that video in the show notes the way Ryan does his ladder test, because I think it'll be an eye opener and it will answer questions that I see a lot on long range only and rock slide. Bullets. Me and you are on the same page with bullets, but I want to hear your philosophy on why you prefer like 215 burgers, or you prefer the match style over the traditional Accubonds or nozzle partitions or anything like that.
So obviously I work around, for those that don't know, I'm a senior reactor operator. I have been a reactor operator at a nuclear power plant. I only throw that in there because everything we do is analytical. We don't do anything alone. It's all peer checked. It's all very information and training driven. And I work around a lot of engineers. A lot of engineers have actually come over and got a license like I have. And so I don't think that a lot of these bullet things, people say this bullet was designed to do this, or it was designed to do that. I don't buy it for a second. There's some education behind the decisions made, but a lot of it is just trial and error. They'll run a bullet, they'll go test it. And a lot of times we're the guinea pig. But from what I've seen, so I guess the point of what I just said is most of this is anecdotal. So we could argue about it till we're blue in the face. But right. I have seen time and time again fragmenting bullets put animals on the ground quicker. I could have someone follow me around for 5 years if they don't believe it. That's fine. There's guys on the internet that say they don't see that. I can't believe it. Because I personally have never seen a well-placed fragmenting bullet not kill within seconds. And it's usually dead right there. They usually do not take another step.
I don't think I'd offer to let people follow you around for 5 years if they don't believe you. They may just be trying to learn from you. Be careful what you promise.
Yeah, some of these people, you just have to show them. Yeah, I mean, I'm serious about that. They might get bored. I'm not very entertaining. But I use what works for me. And I don't fault a guy that if he – confidence is important. So even if it mm-hmm. wasn't the bullet's fault, if they believe it's the bullet's fault, by all means, move on and try something that suits you. But I just don't believe – that these bullets, quote unquote, fail. I believe they're bad shots. As a matter of fact, that I've made, we all make bad shots if you haven't been shooting long enough or you're lying. But I've had 215 burgers bail me out of some bad shots. So they put animals down.
Absolutely.
And I'm a believer. But, you know, I've shot to Corlocks, which I know they had mixed mixed results reputations growing up. But they're a bonded bullet. I've had Accubonds. They're really quote-unquote designed. I hate using that word. But they're a bonded bullet's going to hold together more, and it's going to typically penetrate deeper and usually exit. And I've heard people, one of the biggest reasons why they say they want to use those is because they want a blood trail. Well, if you don't put the animal down right now, I guess you need a blood trail. But burgers don't typically need blood trails. But I just don't like the bullet exiting, and I've bounced back and forth on the theory behind why these bullets kill. But based on what I've seen time and time again, with very few exceptions, the bigger the mass of the bullet on a fragmenting bullet, the quicker it's going to kill. And I think a lot of people try to translate that into a diameter, but it's not, has nothing to do with diameter. A prime example of what I just said would be, generally speaking, a 195 burger is probably going to kill quicker than a 168 grain 30 cal, just because it has more mass and there's more fragmentation doing more destruction to the vitals. And we have been playing around with some cutting edge bullets. I like what I see so far, but they're a little bit different design. They're not just doing that folding pedal that stays attached. Those pedals kind of fragment, and they go out and they destroy the vitals while the center of the main mass of the bullet exits. I've only had a couple kills, but I do like what I'm seeing with them so far. The Barnes work great up close. I think if you were going to shoot everything at 50 or 100 yards, they might be a good option, but they're not a good option for long-range shooters, because once they get sub 2,000 foot per second or so, they just want a pencil. And I'm not going to chance it. That, matter of fact, those fragmenting bullets get better at distance, obviously, to some extent. I mean, there's going to be a threshold there. We're usually seeing around 1,800 foot per second. They kind of lose some performance, but they're still performing better than a Barnes, in my opinion. There's still some fragmentation, the copper jackets coming off and so forth.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if we were only shooting out to 300 or 400 yards, the choice of bullet would matter much less. But when you're shooting from zero to, say, let's say 1,200 yards, you're asking an awful lot of a bullet. And to me, big for caliber match grade bullets like Burgers are the way to go. Just for you, what you've seen, Jeff's seen hundreds of elk get shot with them. I've seen a lot. I don't know how many, but well over 50 elk get shot with Burgers. So to me, it's a no-brainer. I've seen lots of elk get shot with Accubonds, and yeah, they die, but they seem to be on their feet for a lot longer time than the match-grade bullets that fragment.
Yeah, the guys over in Africa, all of the guys that I've hunted with in Africa, there are some guys over there that are into long-range hunting and long-range shooting that get it, but most of the guys I've hunted with in Africa are a little bit leery when you tell them you're shooting a burger, but I've not had any of them complain. As a matter of fact, they've been overall impressed with the performance of the burger. So I've killed blue wildebeest and none of them were long distances, because it's Africa. Unless you're specifically searching it out, it's kind of hard to get long-range shots. But I've killed blue wildebeest. Heart shot, it didn't run more than 100 yards, and you could tell it was dead. It was spewing blood everywhere. Seen I shot a kudu at 50 yards, didn't make it 20 yards, and those are yardages that those burgers aren't really shiny, they haven't come into the prime at those distances. So I bring that up because they do really well in situations that I wouldn't say they're the best at, but they still do perform very well. And then I made a poor shot, a bad wind call on a red stag, and it anchored him. And I was able to get another shot in his lungs and ended up, taking that stag home. It's anecdotal. You can never prove it, but I don't think I would have been recovering that stag if it was shot with a bonded bullet. I did the same thing on water buck last trip to Africa. So that was actually a 230 burger, but it was the same results. It just fragmented so bad, the animal was dead. It just was a matter of how long it was going to take to for him to die. We just got closer and made another shot.
Yeah, again, that's anecdotal, but it seems to be a pattern too, to where I've made bad shots, and the people that say they don't make bad shots just A, haven't made enough shots, or they're lying, because I've shot a few animals in the guts, and there is a huge difference when you hit them in the guts. You know, it's a big old bag of hay. When you hit them in the guts with a fragmenting bullet, it's a lot different than hitting them with a bonded bullet or an A-frame, to me, just from what I've seen.
Yeah, you can definitely, a lot of times with a bonded bullet and a gut shot, if you're not running camera on it and you can't replay it, you won't even think you hit it. I mean, they don't even really flinch. You hit one with a fragmenting bullet, you're going to know it. Absolutely. They're going to be hurting, and they're typically not going to make it very far.
Yeah, that's exactly what I've seen. But so you're saying on the mono bullets right now, you'd look at the cutting edge if you had to run those.
If you were making me, so obviously I've used Barnes. I haven't used anything like the Hammers, or there's a couple other newer ones on the market, but I do think the Hammers are supposed to pedal off similar to a cutting edge, so performance might be the same, but I that would just be speculation on my part. But between Barnes and cutting edge bullets, there's no doubt what I'm picking. The cutting edge bullets, I think, are going to perform at a lot lower velocity threshold, plus just the way the cutting edge bullet's designed, it has very, very little bearing surface. Matter of fact, I would say it has zero bearing surface, but it does have that seal tight band. It typically is going to allow you to push that bullet faster. And since it's a mono bullet, you can pretty much push it as fast as you want within reason. And I'm running 185s in a 7 max at 30-20 and a 7 twist bullet, so they're cranking on the RPMs compared to some of the other options out there. But I like what I've seen so far, and I've never really personally seen anything ugly from a Barnes, because I know that once you push them at a distance, they're going to lose their ability to expand, so I've always used them accordingly. But we've all seen the pictures of them, you know, when they get down below 1800 foot per second, they just barely started to open up, and that's not something I want.
Gotcha.
In a bullet.
We're talking about monos. That's an all copper bullet, like you have to use in the state of California. Where was I going to go with that? The only Barnes bullet that I've ever used and I had trouble with was the original blue Barnes X bullet. I did have it zing through a couple white tails, and I never went back to Barnes after that.
My buddy that I hunt with in Africa was dead set on using them this last trip, so I loaded up some 200 LRXs and a 30 Nosler, and they performed well, but the shots were 50 to 100 yards. They did exactly what you'd expect. I'm always going to take a rifle and a bullet cartridge combination that's going to be able to perform at the max distance I'm comfortable with, and that's right around that 1,000 yards, you know. Depending on conditions, maybe a little bit farther. And from what I've seen time and time again, the fragmenting bullets just work better. And I prefer Berger just because a greater number of times they've been more accurate. The bullets are more consistent. Hornady's kind of stepped up their game, but they're still not on par as far as consistency from bullet to bullet as Berger is. So generally speaking, Bergers are going to be more accurate. And I, from what I've seen with killing with both of the ELDMs and the Bergers, well, they both perform the same terminally. They both kill animals quickly from what I've seen. You know, you kind of get into those plastic tips, kind of make them open up a little bit quicker at short range. So you might get a little bit more splash, a little bit more meat destruction. That bothers some guys, and I don't want to get into ethics here, but as far as meat loss, but that's not something that bothers me, as long as the lead cores still make it into the vitals and making a quick ethical kill, which is what I've seen with the ELDMs. Right. But some of those ELDMs have another issue. We've had blow-ups quite a bit on 147, so I'm kind of done with those, but the 225 seem to be performing very well.
Right, and a lot of that meat damage is velocity related, in my opinion.
Correct. It'll go away as the distance increases.
Great. Go ahead, Dana.
So I was just reading through your article again that you did on Rock Slide, the Battle of the 30 Cals, and it kind of walk me through that a little bit, because I'm kind of a novice at all this, but it seems like you tested both factory and like pre or not preloaded, but your reloading
reloads.
So I mean, obviously I feel like you can speak to this, but it's like you're trying to give options for people that were doing both. Obviously I feel like there's most of the preferences is if you're shooting or if you have the time or you're shooting quite a ways away, that you people prefer reloads because you can be very specific with it. And will you elaborate on that?
So this conversation will be good with Ryan, because I'm not a big 300 rum guy, so I think this outside of the article maybe deserves a little bit of discussion. I think Ryan's played quite a bit with a 30 Nosler now, so he can compare those two. But from my perspective, the 30 Nosler is probably getting on the bigger end of something I want in a 30 caliber in a 9 pound or less rifle. They're, unless you're lying, they're more difficult to control. That's just a fact. Maybe if you're 6'5", 300 pounds, that's not the case. But for little guys like me, that's about the threshold. So I kind of broke that article down into, kind of the why you would pick one over another, and then I probably threw in a little bit of the marketing aspect to it. So to me, we'll just break this into two different places. If you're going to shoot mostly factory ammo, and these open up a whole new can of worms. If you're going to be shooting factory ammo, I think you need to be very proficient at what you're shooting, and you need to be very comfortable with your rifle and your ammo, because the factory ammo, even the accurate stuff at 100 yards or 500 yards, is going to start falling apart around 1,000 if your SDs get bad. And Hornady ammo is probably one of the better ones as far as maintaining good extreme spreads on velocity and standard deviation on velocity. But you still have to watch lot to lots, because you could get 100 foot per second swing, which obviously if you're dialed in at 1,000 yards for one lot and then the next one's 100 foot per second slower or faster, it's going to affect that. And you're going to have to make some zero changes or ballistic calculation changes. But assuming that you have those issues ironed out or that you're aware of it and you're going to do your due diligence to make sure they're under control, between these three cartridges, I think the 300 PRC rules, just because the Nosler, I don't like the Sammy spec of 3.4 inches. Not saying that it can't perform there. It's just kind of giving up some performance. And then from the factory ammo I've pulled apart, it's usually like a ball powder. And I'm just haven't found a ball powder that is very good in different conditions as far as extreme spreads. It reacts negatively to temperature changes. So Hornady, from what I've seen, is either using Reloader 26 or H1000 or Rotombo in their 300 PRC loads, and they are all, in my use, have been extremely temp stable, even though Reloader 26 is not advertised as such. And then the 300 Win Mag, it really, the win for the 300 Win Mag would be all of the different options you have, but they don't really have a great option. At the time of writing that article, they had a really good option with the Berger 215 factory ammo, but Berger has discontinued that because it's not Sammy, and I just think their lawyers, I'm making some assumptions here, but I assume when they, did the NAMO, if I'm saying that correctly, merge, the guys that run the company got together, they decided that was no longer a smart move. So the 300 Berger ammo from Berger, that's at 3.6 inches long, which shot well in everything, even though they were Sammy chambers, that's not an option. So to wrap up the factory ammo option, I think the 300 PRC rules. Their chamber is longer for a lot of the bullets that guys want to shoot. I think personally it's too long for a 215 Berger and some of the smaller bullets, which I prefer. But those guys that want to shoot those 225 ELDMs, which perform very well on game, that want to shoot the 230 burgers, and the guys that are gluttons for punishment that want to shoot that 245 burger, it's a great chamber. And the cartridge will push it fast enough to really make it worth it. And if you put a good break on it, or if you just have a heavier rifle, it's going to be perfect for those larger bullets. But leaving that factory ammo discussion, then you kind of break down the cartridges the way I see them. They're all about case capacity. So the 300 Win Mag and the 300 PRC, for all intents and purposes, are the same. I mean, you can get ADG brass in the 300 PRC that's a little bit smaller case capacity than like Norma 300 Win Mag brass. So you're going to have a lot of overlap there. And if you're building a custom rifle, I don't really see a good reason why you wouldn't just spec your chamber, whether that's something that you come up with on your own or you just talk to a good gunsmith that has lots of luck with one of those cartridges and has a good chamber spec that he likes. I like for 215 burgers right around that 200,000 freeborn. That pretty much works with any cartridge we're going to shoot the burger 215 in. You know, give or take it. And if I were going to go one way, it'd probably be a couple thousandths longer, but I wouldn't want to go a whole lot shorter. And then the 30 Nosler, you can get ADG brass on it, is roughly 5 grains larger than those other two cases. So if you throat it accordingly, you're either going to run faster. And this is assuming that everything else was the same. You get fast barrels, you get slow barrels. Different guys want to use different powders and so on and so forth. But if you're getting the most out of the 30 Nosler, that extra case capacity is going to buy you 50 foot per second to 100 foot per second faster. Or run the same velocity as the other two at a lower pressure, which should theoretically give you more barrel life. But when we're talking about that, you're maybe looking at, it's not something you'll ever be able to notice, because you're talking like 50 rounds on one barrel versus another. You're never going to notice it. And if you're shooting and practicing and you're proficient with your rifle, I really don't think any of them are going to get much over 1,000 rounds and still be easy to keep in tune and still shoot the way I want them to shoot, which is sub half minute when you consider flyers and things like that. So, to rehash that, and I think I made it pretty clear on my opinion in that article, 300 PRC is probably going to win for factory ammo because they've got the best design SAMI chamber. We've got new ammo coming on board all the time. Lapua just, I think they pronounce it Lapua, but us idiots in the U.S. call it Lapua. They've got brass coming. I'm sure Burger will have ammo for the 300 PRC, which will basically replace that 300 Win Mag, because they'll be able to do it at SAMI spec and still give us the performance we want. So, like I said, the 300 PRC is going to win the factory ammo option. It seems to be catching on, and that's why it's catching on, because I think a lot of guys are still shooting factory ammo, those plinkers, the steel plinkers. And it does well for hunting. But if you're building a custom rifle, and I still had to choose one, and you weren't considering the, you know, like the 300 Win Mag, if you for some reason lost your ammo, you'll be able to pick a box of 300 Win Mag up anywhere. But anything can happen, but I've never had an issue with forgetting my ammo. It'd be pretty difficult to remember your rifle and forget your ammo. But if I had to build one of those rifles with this specs I wanted, I would go 30 Nosler. They've got plenty of brass options. There's not a lot of great factory ammo options, but most of us don't care.
I don't think people realize that when they're shopping around to choose a gun, that they should look at how easy it is to get ammunition for it. Sometimes it runs out in places. Like, I've seen Ryan hunt around for different kinds of ammunition multiple times, and it's like a mad hunt to acquire it, and I don't think people like put that a lot of thought into that before they decide. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I don't know. No one I know does. But I do think there are guys out there that do it, but there's no guarantee with that. I mean, if you look around at what's going on right now, you can't get any of that.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. a lot of those guys chose 300 PRC over the 30 nozzle because of the factory ammo options. Matter of fact, I just took possession of the Rival, Fierce Rival, that we got for review purposes, and I chose 300 PRC for factory ammo to ease my review process, so I didn't have to go do a load development on it, and the rifle showed up, and I can't get factory ammo for it. So I just don't think that's... And I preach to people all... It's kind of funny, because I preach to people about that all the time, and then I caught myself in my own...
Yeah, but you're not... But you're reviewing it, though. You're not taking it, honey.
And I have 300 PRC components. I have brass, I have bullets, I have powder. So I'm not in a bad spot. I just have to do some more work for the review.
Right. You're not in a situation where it's do or die. It's just something you're reviewing.
Yeah.
But to get back on the focus of it, Brian did an awesome... It's one of our most popular articles. He did the Battle of the 30 Cals on Rockslide, and that's what he's talking about. And he tested the 300 Win, the 30 Nozzler, and the 300 PRC all with 215s. Was that right, 215s?
Yeah. Well, I tried, but that 300 PRC, which was a proof barrel, just did not like... Matter of fact, that was the pickiest barrel I've ever had. It didn't like 215s. It didn't like them with H1000, Rotombo, Reloader 26. It didn't like them with 215 primers. It didn't like them with 250 primers. So I moved on. I ended up trying 225s, ELDMs, 208 ELDMs, 212 ELDXs in that barrel. It didn't like any of those. And I had already had this serial number, this rifle on file with Africa, and I had a trip coming up, so I had to take that rifle. Mm. Literally 2 days before I flew out, I took it out and ran a ladder test with 230 burgers, and they stacked on top of each other with Rotombo. So that's what I ended up taking. So I guess that is something we could talk about for a real quick second. I've got two different 300 PRCs that I've played with since, and it hasn't changed my opinion on where the cartridge falls. And it also kind of, I just don't think I got three of the pickiest barrels out there. I don't think the chamber, the throat specs work for a lot of different bullets as it is from Sammy.
Oh, 300 PRC?
Do what?
Are you talking about a 300 PRC?
300 PRC. They seem, yeah. So the other two that I've got, the Rival is being a little bit picky with 215s. I'm not done with it yet, so I'm not going to say it's not going to shoot them yet, but it's taken more work. And then that the Gunworks Magnus I have seems to be a little more picky too, but it shoots 225 ELDMs in the same hole, so I'm not real worried about it. I mean, Gunworks sent that to me with their ammo, and it stacks them in the same hole, and I'm out of it. They're out of ammo, so I just I replicated their load, and it stacks them in the same hole, so I'm not really worried about it. But it does seem to be a little bit more picky towards other bullets for whatever reason, all three of those barrels.
I've heard that a couple of times, and people get very confused, and that's, and even in your article, you can't compare a Sammy Spec 300 Win Mag, 300 PRC, and 30 Nozzler. And people continue to try to do that. And to me, you're really shorting the 300 Win Mag and definitely shorten the 30 Nozzler.
Yeah. Yeah, but having said that, the throats are not... The 300 Win Mag and the 30 Nozzler throats are not how I would have designed them, but they still work very well with a 215 burger.
Right.
They don't work very well, or you're losing case capacity with long bearing surface bullets like the 225 ELP, but if I were going to build those, I would shoot a 215 burger anyways. I would throat them to my preferences, but I have had Sammy throated chambers in both of those cartridges, multiple, and they shot very well. Now, the speed may not be where guys want it, and that's really, to me, that's the biggest distinguishing factor. I think if you took 10 of each, the speed would fall on average where the case capacities lie, but speed's not everything. I've got a 300 WSM right now shooting 215s that I'm in love with. I don't know if I'll ever go back to those big magnums again. It stays in tune. It's accurate as can be. And it doesn't lose a lot of performance. Matter of fact, it's on par with my first two 300 Win Mags I've built as far as speed. I'm using different powders, so it's not like you just talked about. It's not really an apples to apples. It's not a fair comparison. But
to me, like, I've built it's a totally different can of worms, but I built a 30 Nosler Plus P, and I'm running almost 3.8, and I'm running 89 grains of 570, so it's not even, it's getting more in the realm of a 300 rum than it is actually a 30 Nosler or 300 PRC.
Yeah. But that's one of those deals where that Plus P throw is actually using the case capacity of that cartridge. I venture to guess if you chose Plus P's in all three of those cartridges, the Nosler would probably distance itself a little bit more. But that's just speculation on my part based on what I've seen with other testing and cartridge capacities.
So to put that into the Battle of the 30 Cals, if you were to redo it, are you still putting Nosler? Even if you put a WSM in there, what would your thought process be on that?
Well, I would have to. The only Plus P chamber I have is a 338 Terminator, and
now if you just went straight like 30 Nosler, 300 rum, well, or, so not not rum, yeah, sorry, so 300 PRC.
I personally, if they played out the way they still play, if they played out the way I expected them to play out, I think I would still go WSM, just because it stays in tune longer. And a lot of people, that we could talk about that for hours. It doesn't need cleaned as often. It's not as hard to clean. The carbon ring in the throat doesn't get there as quick. It's not as hard to get out. And I can shoot the rifle while maintaining under half minute more rounds. And then when I clean it, it doesn't need tweaked to maintain that, whatever you want to call it. I'm going to call it quarter minute accuracy. Matter of fact, the gun often shoots in the ones, whereas I've had some pretty accurate 300 Win Mags and Noslers, but they're more of a quarter minute to 3/10 group kind of guns.
When you say come out of tune, are you talking chasing the lands?
Well, so when I say come out of tune, I mean the accuracy starts to fall off for whatever reason. One of those because the rifle's dirty and needs cleaned, or because the throat is wearing, and it just seems to be more accurate over a longer number of shots.
Gotcha.
And the, you know, a lot of guys don't want to hear this, but the Ventress guys prove that over and over and over. When the wind's blowing, the 300 WSM rules. And, you know, Rich Sherman's cartridges are starting to knock on its door. That 300 Max seems like it's probably capable of pushing that same accuracy now with a little less powder. And that's a whole other topic of discussion. These bullets seem to have a velocity node and a given length of a barrel, and it may change a little bit depending on what powder you use. But if you can't reach the next node, you might as well use the cartridge with the less powder. And I kind of talked about that in this article that I wrote for you guys, but it really deserves its own topic of discussion.
Yeah, all that, you know, you plus if you bring in the Shermans or you bring in the Plus P or you bring in the Boar Riders, and it's not a fair comparison, and I try to tell people that, but it's very that's all very interesting, but it's so broad of a topic.
Yeah, the reason why I threw in my Terminator when you asked me about that is because if that Terminator's Plus P throw, and for those that don't know, the 338 Terminator's 338 Lapua approved with a Plus P throw. If that thing is any indication of what Plus P throats do, that thing was stupid easy to tune. And I would have never, ever told you that something that big with 106 grains of powder would tune that easy. But I was done the first time out.
I've had five of them, and they've all just been too simple.
Yeah, I did go tweak the seating depth a little bit after the first time out, but it didn't improve accuracy. So I was realistically done with the first outing. pretty impressive.
I'll throw you a curveball because I just keep hearing about it. What do you think about that left gain twist?
Well, if you're in the northern hemisphere, it would take spin drift out of your equation. But it would just add it if you go hunt in New Zealand.
I
don't think there's an advantage to it.
So what I hear is the recoil, it brings it more even instead of breaking to the right, which I personally never really noticed. But I haven't ever shot a left gain twist, so maybe I'm missing out.
I have always wondered why, once we figured out that spin drift at long distance was something we needed to take into account, why we didn't just swap all our tooling over to left gain. But that's also, you know, it's a lot of money involved in that probably. But
right.
You're typically talking about a quarter to a half minute at most in windage. So it's not a huge deal. But the torque is something I would just have to shoot to see.
Yeah, I've never done it, but I keep hearing it, so I may have to try it. Last but not least, 6.5. This will be interesting. And I'm going to say the 6.5 PRC for elk. And I'll put it out there as Tanya has shot two elk, 6.5 PRC?
Yeah, I think so.
And I have shot two elk and witnessed multiple elk get shot with a 6.5 PRC from 0 to 715 yards, Tanya's being the farthest. And it worked. And I put that out there because if I had a choice, I would not use a 6.5 PRC on elk. I would use a 30 cal like we've been talking about. But it's hard to argue that it can work. I would love to hear your thoughts on that, Ryan, after I served that up for you.
Yeah, I
don't think I'm going to disagree with anything you said. So if you put a... I've had problems with 147s blowing up, so I wouldn't use them just because I don't trust them. But from what I've seen on terminal performance with a 147, if you put it in the lungs out to 1,000 yards in a PRC, so let's say it leaves the muzzle at 2950, which is not pushing it hard, and you hit it in the lungs at 1,000, you're probably under that threshold that a lot of guys really like to have for energy and velocity. But I still think it's going to penetrate into the lungs, and it's probably going to destroy both lungs, and it's probably going to run a couple yards and fall over. Same thing with the 156 Burger. From what I've seen, it might be a little bit better in that terminal performance. But I don't have a lot of kills with both of them. Definitely not like I do with the 215s and other 30 cal bullets. But they're going to fall over. I mean, it's gonna take the life out of them. The same thing would happen if you shot them with a 22 long rifle at 100 yards. They're going to die. But the big animals that I've shot with a 215 Burger have not moved. I mean, you can see it when you're running video on it. Most of them, my first elk I killed was in a weird position. I didn't actually get to see the bullet impact. I was actually standing with my rifle on a rock, and it just didn't recoil straight back into me. So I didn't get to see it, but it didn't take another step or another breath. Most of the other animals I've shot, I've seen the impacts, and you know, I shot a tar at 600 yards with a 215 Burger. It was dead instantly, fell off a cliff. Everything I've shot with a smaller caliber bullet has lived long. If you averaged all those kills up versus the kills with a 30 cal, they've lived longer. And maybe you guys just like hiking around in the woods looking for wounded animals or an animal that ran 100 yards. I mean, it took me 2 hours to find my elk when we shot him at 800 yards, and we knew where he fell. We had a picture. We took a picture from the cliff we shot him from. We knew exactly where he fell. It took us 2 hours. Now, if he had moved, it might have taken us all day. We might have had to come back the next day. I don't like tracking animals. I like them to follow where they were. And more often than not, the 30 cal puts them down quicker. And some of that's taken into account. You know, I've made a couple bad shots with my 215s. Not the bullet's fault. I just put them in the wrong spot, and it still put them down. I can guarantee they would have ran off with a 6.5.
That's the thing that experience teaches you is, yeah, it's not so scientific. It's not something that I can say this is factual. But when I shoot them with a big 30 cal, they take far less steps than they do if I shoot them with a 7 mag that I've used or a 6.5.
Yeah, now having said that, I think I'm leaning really hard towards preferring a 156 burger on something like deer and antelope out to 1,000 yards. They're just easier to put the bullet where you want it.
They are. You go back to what you said about, I have a 9-pound 300 Terminator. I just lent it to somebody to use. And all I got back from was, Jesus Christ, how do you shoot this thing?
Yep.
Because it does have a lot of bite. It's shooting a 245 burger out of it.
Yeah.
And it's shooting 101 grains of 570. So it has got some wallop on both ends.
Yeah, you get into those bigger bullets, bigger cartridges, more powder, you need something a little bit heavier to control it, or lots of practice. But the flip side of that, no matter how good I am with my 30 cals, if you put me in a weird shooting position, it's just not, I'm not going to be able to maintain quarter minute in wind from a weird shooting position on the side of a hill with that. And the 6.5 just has so much less recoil that you're able to put your bullet where you want it more often.
Right.
And when I say more often, I'm not talking about when you go shoot your 5-shot groups on steel or whatever it is these guys do from a flat prone shooting off their mat.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about, you know, off a, you know, dirt clods, and mm-hmm. you can't get a flat spot. You might be shooting a little bit up, which makes it even more difficult. The 6.5 is definitely going to do a better job. And I like what I see with them for those that smaller, I guess, less strong, less big. It's really not that they're strong. It's just they've got so much more meat to absorb that energy,
right,
and absorb those fragments. And I mean, I couldn't have been happier with my 156 burger performance in that dull sheep I shot. It was pretty impressive.
Well, that looked good. But when you hit them in the heart, I mean, Jesus, yeah. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But you're right. Confidence is a thing. Tanya shoots the 6.5 PRC extremely well, and she has confidence she can hit. She saw her elk get hit. So it's hard not to bring that rifle when she's confident in it, to hand in her rifle that I shoot and say, here, shoot this that she has not shot much and is not confident in it.
Oh, he loves to do that to me. He loves to do that to me, not tell me ahead of time, or like switch up the scope. Yeah. And I'm like, what the hell's wrong with the scope? Oh, it's not the one that you usually use. I'm like,
yeah,
I don't care about reviewing stuff right now, you asshole. I'm like, give me what I'm used to. Give me what I like. Yeah.
I listen to your guys' podcast.
He loves to switch shit up on me.
I took that X5 off and I put a Huskim on there, and I thought she was going to murder me.
No, that would have been too kind. I would have probably just tortured you for the rest of your life for that. I was so mad.
Yeah.
Because you just get to what you're comfortable with, and I don't spend as much time out in the woods like you guys do. So, you know, I just, it's kind of a crutch, and I'm not going to lie or apologize, honestly. But it's so maddening when he does that.
Well, I think that's a key. I've spent, I don't even want to tell people what I've spent trying to figure out what my preferences are. And that's really why, the biggest reason why I do these reviews, I know there's a lot of guys out there like me that aren't going to listen because they have to go figure it out themselves. But
sure.
Right.
We are trying to save people time and money.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think if you can find something like you have, obviously, Tanya, that you can get out there and do what's far more important, and that's practice with what you have,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to changing. I mean, I'm changing rifles, changing barrels, changing scopes, changing actions, changing stocks, whatever, triggers. I haven't gotten really used to any particular rifle. I mean, they've all done well, but I mean, that's probably my favorite thing about this Magnus that I got from the Gunworks guy. I just pulled that thing out of the box, dial it like the Revix says, and pull the trigger and it hits. And it's probably not necessarily as accurate as some of my other rifles, which a lot of guys will say, well, what the heck, it's $11,500, but it's going to hit you hard every time.
Well, isn't that what they say, 1,000 yards out of the box? Isn't that the motto?
It just maybe won't do as small groups, but you aren't always out there tuning the damn thing.
Right.
Right.
Which is hard for me to mentally get over, but it does what it's supposed to do.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's fun, you know, reviewing stuff when you know ahead of time that's what you're going to be doing with the gear.
Yeah, sometimes it's like to surprise you.
It's kind of a surprise attack.
Yeah, someone doesn't just throw it down in front of you and say, shoot this.
And not tell me.
I'm not trying to make this a Husqvarna bash.
No, there's other things he's done like
that. She says, the scope's fogged up. And I'm like, God dang. So I looked through it, and I was like, nope, it's not fogged up. It's just not a X5. And she's like, are you sure? And I was like, no, it's just not as clear as an X5. And she still made it happen, but I heard about it for 2 weeks after.
Well, this 2 weeks, I mean, you're still hearing about it now, and it's been, what, 2 years?
2 years.
Yeah. Didn't you shoot an elk recently with a rum?
No,
not me.
No? Mm-mm. I thought I was listening. It might have been a couple years ago.
Yeah,
shot an elk with a rum. Yeah, but it was 3 years ago.
Yeah. I must have missed the podcast and just trying to get caught up.
She is not a fan of. She's not anti recoil because she shot a 338 Lapua quite a bit, but she is very comfortable, and it's the climber stock. She really likes the climber stock, and she really likes the 6.5 PRC.
It's a sweet round. I'm playing with a short action ultramag, 6.5 short action ultramag right now, and I just don't think it's going to be worth the extra powder over the PRC. So I do like that PRC. It's super. I've had two. I've got another one I haven't started load development on, but they're super easy to tune, and they stay in tune, and they're accurate, and they low recoil with a brake.
Very much, and they just seem to tune. They seem to. You can get an accurate load. Heck, I'm not gonna lie. I took a No Munitions, his Mayhem series load 156s, and the out of the gate, I shot a 10 shot group that was just over half inch, and I've never really done anything else with it.
Yeah, there's really no reason to mess with that. It's doing what you want it to do.
I lied to you. There's one more. Two scopes that you use, and one you wouldn't.
Two scopes that I would use and one that I wouldn't.
Two brands you would use, one you wouldn't.
So I would just say off the top of my head, I'm Night Force is going to be number one because I've got the most experience with it. And they've never let me down. I do have one I've got to do some more testing on that kind of did something that caught me off guard, but it's too early to say. There's anything wrong with it, but I also have to throw in reputation because it means something to me. And I'm not talking about a warranty. I'm talking about a reputation. I'm talking about a reputation for not using the warranty.
I'm glad you specified because that's very important.
But the other one, and I have less experience with it, but it is performing exactly like it should. I'm a little indifferent, actually probably a little against the weight, but I really like the Revic. I like what it's doing. Really like the heads up display. You know, when Landon wanted to send me that scope, I wasn't immediately on board because of the weight. But you know, he talked me into trying it. I like it. So I think these are the two scopes that I would currently recommend. If you made me throw a third one in there, I would say Zeiss, just because I've used a lot of them and not had any problems with them.
Specific model?
I've used the V6 a lot, and I've used the V4 a lot. Used the V4 a lot more. I had a V6 that I sold to a buddy, and we shoot all the time, so I'm still very much in touch with that scope. But I've had three or four V4s. And they, when you dial them, they hit where they're supposed to. The glass is good. The reticle's okay. But when you're talking about the V4, you're talking about a price range scope that I don't really think anything else out there touches, you know, in that $1,000 price range. So I have to throw that in there. If you made me throw one scope out there that... I don't know if I can do two or two, just do one, but the Vortex, every Vortex I've used has failed. They've taken care of me and they've treated me amazingly. I mean, they are an amazing success story on customer service. Absolutely. They've overnighted me scopes. And they are genuinely concerned. that there was a problem. I mean, it's not just a, okay, that happens, we'll send you another scope, but they're genuinely concerned. We're sorry there's a problem. We will, you know, whether or not they do it or not, we'll look at it and make sure we get this issue figured out. But mm-hmm. that's been from everything on an AMG with a scratchy or tight
parallax
knob, yeah. clear down to reticles literally just falling out of a Gen 2 PST. I want to like them because they're American made, you know, their warranty's awesome, they stand behind their product, but I just, my hunts either cost too much money or they take too many points to draw, being a non-resident in most of these places I want to hunt, and I just can't afford to have one of those take crap on me when I'm hunting. And the other one is based mostly on reputation, but the one I have now has lost zero, or not lost zero, yeah, lost zero. Track's fine, but it lost zero, and that's Leupold. Again, I love the scope. I love when I'm using the scope. I love the scope. It's a Mark V HD 3-6x18. It's got nice clicks. I like the zero stop. The reticle's really nice, but it lost zero. And that was in just me testing around here. That's not even in, you know, being around on four-wheelers and airplanes and that type of stuff. So
when you say lost zero, because I want you to specify, because I've read, I think your lost zero is the same as mine. What happened? What do you say return to zero didn't work?
So I'm going to talk about this Leupold losing zero, and then I'll talk about one of my other used-to-be favorite scopes that lost zero. So this one lost zero. So if I'm going to put a new scope on my rifle, on my hunting rifle, mm-hmm. and I don't discuss this in my reviews because I don't really know how some of the scope companies feel about it. And that shouldn't really matter, but it does. I don't want to just make a bad name for people just because. But so I'll go out and I'll test tracking. I'll do box testing, and I've played around with whether or not I would like to do a 100% mechanical, where I just put it on a bench and put it into a clamp and test how it goes up and down, or a lot of times I'll do a tall ladder test with a super accurate rifle, which was what I'm defaulting to now because it's quicker for me. Mm-hmm. I've been using a 20 VT that almost always shoots quarter minute. If it doesn't shoot quarter minute, it's because I jerk the trigger. So I'll start with that ladder testing, and then what I'll do is I'll shoot a group with the rifle. I'll pull the rifle off of the scope. We're talking about mounting it in a pick rail, Picatinny rail. Mm-hmm. I'll shoot a group, pull it off. I'll put the rifle back on to check how it returns to zero mechanically with the pick rail to make sure that there's no reticle or there's no point of impact displacement there. And with Night Force rings or Hawkins rings in a high quality Picatinny rail like a Warn or a Night Force or a Murphy Precision, I typically get zero group displacement. Then I'll take it off and I'll smack it with a rubber mallet, and I'll put it back on and I'll see how it groups. The Night Forces historically have put them right back in the same hole, and you expect that because that guy that signed that little sticker on the top of your Night Force scope, he already did that,
right?
And he did it with a $100,000 collimator, so you know that when it left Night Force, it was already. That was already done. Right.
And if you haven't seen that, they don't just hit a rubber mallet. They beat the hell out of it on the top of the table.
Yes, they do. And then every one of them gets that or doesn't get QC'd off. So, like my March scope, it passed that test fine. As a matter of fact, I sent you that video, Ryan. I don't know if you remember.
Yep, but I do.
My March scope eventually lost zero in use. Like, I'm shooting it, and then it lost zero. And I'll come back to what I mean by lost zero. So the Leupold I did this test with, and it was off 3 minutes, low and right.
How far?
3 minutes.
Oh, so
at 100 yards, it was 3 inches. So it lost it in the impact testing versus the March. Now, Jeff and I have been talking about this. We're going to probably take this testing a little bit farther in the future. We're probably going to go back to bedding our scopes in our rings. I don't believe in scope lapping. I think it takes too much material and probably in some cases might make it worse because the clamp force may not be good enough to keep the scope in the rings, which I've not had, it's been a long, the last time I had scopes moving in rings was with Tally rings. I've never had scopes move in the rings with Night Force or Hawkins rings. Mm-hmm. But if it can't pass that, and I wasn't rough on it. I didn't record it, but I wasn't rough on it. You saw the March test. I wasn't rough on it. I think if you throw one of these rifles in a prop plane and it's sitting there vibrating, and I know these engineers out there should probably know what I'm talking about. A lot of guys don't have any dealings with this, but those vibrations are far more hard than a jar, like just a punch or, you know, falling on a rock or whatever. And then things like vibrating repeatedly on four-wheeler handlebars or those racks, those will destroy a scope in a heartbeat. But and the reason why I brought up the bedding is because talking to these scope manufacturers, and they most of the ones we've had conversations with, and March pointed this out, most of the problems with the scopes not tracking correctly or losing zero are due to the tube being tweaked. So it places a high importance on your mounting system, which is why a high dollar rail is definitely worth it. Why your action either needs to be square or not bent and or not machined incorrectly. And why it's always a good idea to check to see if it needs bedding, the rail needs bedded to the action, or just bed it. And then why, like I said, Jeff and I have been talking, we're probably going to start bedding our scopes to our rings to see if that changes some of it. Because I've seen a couple of scopes do it that I wouldn't expect. It's also why I think the tube thickness is important. Like these Night Force scopes are a little bit heavier than some of those other scopes, and I didn't used to get it, but I think that plays a huge role in how well it's going to continue to track, on how well it's going to hold zero. So I guess to rehash that little piece, tracking is if I click it from zero up 30 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever, it moves that distance and then it comes back to that zero. Mm-hmm. Versus losing zero is at some point you haven't moved the scope, but it starts impacting off of where your zero was, or at some point you go to dial 20 minutes and then you dial back to zero and it doesn't go to zero. And it may go back to the 20 minutes when you dial it back to 20 minutes, but it's not returning to zero. Eventually, if it really loses zero, like in the case with my March scope when it had its issue, and this loophole scope, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's off 3 minutes low and right. When you dial it 20 minutes up, it goes 20 minutes up. It's not the 20 minutes you thought, because the zero is not where you thought it was. Mm-hmm. I think listeners can understand what I'm talking about. But some of these guys obviously don't check this, or they don't believe it's an issue. I don't know, but it's obvious when you go to dial. When you got a gun that shoots like my 300 WSM, and you go out to shoot a 600-yard target and you dial it up, whatever, I don't know what that is, probably 9 minutes, 9 and a half minutes, 10 minutes, and it doesn't hit the orange dot, you know something's wrong. So no matter what scope you're using, I'm starting to get into that check your zero and check it often deal, so you know.
Absolutely.
You know that you're going to hit your target.
Yeah, and that's why I ask you how far, because I was reading something the other day on Rockside, and the guy was like, it doesn't return to zero. I dialed up to 800 yards, and it's like, whatever, so let's just say 3 minutes low, but I took it back to 100, it's right on. Well, that's not a return to zero. There's something else going on, or, you know, there's something pushing on your bullet that you haven't accounted for. So I just wanted to specify.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But
yeah, so...
You got back... Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, three scopes or two scopes I would use, or three scopes I would use. I trust Night Force, the Revic, and the Zeiss, and I know scopes are going to fail. Doesn't matter if it's made by humans, one's going to break. But when you talk about the number of them out there, those are the three I would use. And at this point, I really can't trust Leupold or Vortex. And like I said, I want... which is kind of a shame, because those two companies are, you know... Leupold has a huge... history and a kind of a, you know, have been great to the hunting community, but yeah. I just don't think they're on par with the other options in those dollar ranges.
Dude, it's like calling somebody's kid ugly when you say you don't like Leopold. That's
yeah.
But what happened with the March? How did it lose zero over time?
Well, I think it must have been a mounting issue. I don't know because I sent it to March. Most people don't know anything about March at all. And then those that do probably don't know this, but March tests their scopes just like Night Force. So there's no March scope that leaves without getting smacked. I think they told me, I hate quoting numbers because I have a horrible memory. I want to say Night Force does it at 1.25 Gs. And March does it at 1G, but they test them all for impacting, and then they put it back in the collimator. So they know if the reticle shifts after impact. And when they got my scope that had lost zero on my rifle back to Japan, it passed their test. So it had to be it being somewhat tweaked in the rings somehow. And it was on a Murphy rail with Night Force rings. Which kind of led to that discussion Jeff and I had been having about how we probably should start betting our rings just to see what kind of effect that has. But to me, that kind of plays a role. And I know they're delicate instruments. I mean, we are expecting them to move a fraction of an inch at 100 yards or a fraction of an angle. Mm-hmm. And we are beating the crap out of them. And we're twisting knobs and turning them up and down. And I know it's a lot to ask, but to me, if you had two of them and one of them had to be really, really attention to detail while you're mounting it, and one you could just slap in there, I would pick the one that you could just slap in there every time. But it kind of feel like that's not the case.
Yeah, it's hard for me to say I can just take any old scope from Night Force and I don't give a shit, really. I mean, yeah, rings come loose. Rings can be a little bit canted, you know, so can your rails. But why is that not happening to Night Forces, you know? Because of the thicker side, you know, walls of the scope, yep. I'm guessing. But why don't those other scope manufacturers see that and produce scopes that are kind of human-proof or more human-proof than others?
Yeah, and I have to blame that on the buyers, because they and I was in this boat. That's why I tried March. And I hate to keep pounding on them, because I'm not saying I'll never try one again, because that would be a lie. But we want that lighter weight, and it takes, I mean, you think about it, they're all in the same size package. The only way to lose weight is to make those components lighter, and, mm-hmm. and the tube itself to get lighter has to be thinner. Mm-hmm. I also think that's probably why you see a lot of guys have, well, you, the ATAC R, I would say, is probably even more, or I guess less prone to failure than the other models, because it's 34 millimeter tube and right. Tubed a little bit thicker.
Right. And I don't know how many animals and how many times I've shot an NXS, and they just always seem to just track.
Yeah. Yeah. I do. The NX8's become my favorite scope, but you can't. The NXS is still the scope to be judged by when it comes to a scope that has to perform every time. I'm not saying there's not scopes out there with better options, you know, nicer clicks, you know, better glass, better reticles, whatever. I don't care about any of that crap if it's not going to let me hit my animal.
Yeah, there's only one scope for Tanya.
That's right there.
And that's the X5. If I don't have it on there, I'm going to be in trouble.
Damn straight.
She wants to see a bright, pretty picture.
That's yeah, right.
She wants to look through a windshield.
I'd like to, yeah. I mean, and what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's funny that people like will accuse, you know, you of being a fanboy for certain brands, but it never makes sense to me why that's such a bad thing. Like, if a company has produced a quality product over and over and over and over and over again, like, why can't their reputation hold, and why isn't that good enough? Like, well, that's not being a fanboy to me.
No. My favorite thing I get accused of, and I think anybody that actually knows me would say you could not be farther from the truth. I get accused of, and I know there are guys out there that do this, but I get accused of justifying purchases. There is no way. If I spend $3,000 on a scope or $2,000 on a scope, that thing better perform like a $2,000 scope or it's gone.
Right.
You can. Absolutely. I don't own any rifles. That's not true. I own two rifles that I owned 10 years ago. They're Cooper Varminers. I don't own scopes that failed me. I don't own rifles that don't perform the way I want. That they're gone. And I don't care if I lose $500 or $1,000 on them. There's no need for me to keep them if they're not performing at the level that I intended for them to perform. I will justify no purchase.
Well, it makes no sense. We put all this effort in all year for one point in time. Why would we put something on there that we're not sure about? That makes no sense.
Yep. Exactly.
And sponsor money, like people like to say, oh, you got that for free or you got that at a reduced rate. Well, I'm sorry, but like you guys just said, even at a reduced rate or even for free, if it doesn't work or it's going to shit the bed on you in a big hunt, it's not going to be worth it. And that's what people don't get. It's like, it's not worth it.
Yeah, I don't want to bash companies, but we've mentioned a couple names tonight that I wouldn't use if they paid me. So.
Well, and that's not bashing them. It's they need to do better. They're not, obviously, they make a product. And I'm talking about lots of companies, not just the ones you mentioned. They make a product not for a dumb end user. They make a product for a box store that they can get out the door from the box store.
Yep.
Instead of making the creme de la creme that some companies out there that we discuss make. And I think that's not on me or you. That's on the end buyer. To decide, all we're doing, I always say this, we report, you decide. If you don't like what we're reporting, go somewhere else.
Yeah, it's your money. You can do what you want with it. It's not going to hurt my feelings. Matter of fact, if you miss a deer, if you miss a 200-inch deer, it just means he's there next year, so the rest of us get a crack at it. So have at it.
Well, and it's so subjective sometimes, and people don't seem to want to understand that. Like, I mean, not talking about weapons, but like I have a pair of Apple AirPods, and then I have a pair of Bose ones. Well, I've always had good luck with Bose products, but I really wanted to like the Apples, and I just, they don't fit my ears. They don't like sound as good to me, but that's no slam on them. They just don't work good for me. And Ryan loves them. So it's just like people just get mad if you don't like their weapon of choice or their product of choice. But it's like it's maybe better for you than for me.
Well, you nailed it, Ryan. They make an emotional purchase. You know, they've invested their time and, you know, energy and money into that product. And if we bash on it, then automatically we're the enemy.
Well, you can see on the... So this is anecdotal, obviously, but you can see on our YouTube likes, dislikes. I think most people that come to look at reviews on YouTube are trying to justify a purchase.
Absolutely.
I think they've already made up their mind about that piece of gear, and they either want you to hold their hand and tell them they made a good purchase and slap them on the back and say good job, or they get angry when you tell them it's not good. And I try to be objective in my reviews, but I will also tell you my opinion. There's a lot of guys out there that are new that look on guys like you and I that have spent the time and the money and the years going through this gear, and they don't want to do it. And that's the number one reason why I started doing reviews, is because it's borderline insanity. I would rather just pick up something that works and go shoot deer and elk and antelope. But you know, that you can't always do that. That's why I put my shoes on and my clothes on just like everyone else when it comes to morning time. But I do have a lot of experience that other guys don't have, and I want to share that so that they can go do what I wish I could do or wish I would have done. And that's just go buy more tags. Mm-hmm. Go spend more time hunting. Stops. You go buy the equipment that works. Go practice with it. Don't try 300 different pieces of equipment to figure out the one that works for you. Sometimes what you got's good enough. Sometimes it's not. And I think that's what we're trying to do with our reviews.
I would say you guys do a great job at it. And we started Rockslide just like Long Range Only to put stuff out there. And sometimes it's going to be stuff that you don't want to hear. Matt Cashel is always telling people at the end of his reviews, would I buy this or would I not? And a lot of times he says, nope, I wouldn't buy that. And it makes the company that makes that product so mad, but I would rather tell a hard truth than somebody buy a piece of gear that's going to fail them.
Yeah, when it comes to optical performance, like I need this glass to perform at an optical level that's above and beyond anything else out there. You know, I need to see what I want to see. There's no one that does a better job than Matt. Period. Mm-hmm. He understands the technical aspect of it, and I just don't care that much. I know a lot of people get angry or disappointed with some of my scope reviews, but I just don't care. The glass doesn't matter. I mean, obviously, you know, Tanya hates Huskama because she can't see through it. But
well, I'm 43 now. I'm going blind, like, by the minute. I feel like I'm old. So, I mean, I need the best glass.
I like, you know, when you're... If they were the same scope and one had better glass, buy the better glass. But I place tracking above that.
Absolutely.
There's not even a close second. So it's hard for me to get interested in... Can I see real well with this glass? Now, obviously, there's some. I owned a Huskama. Mechanically, it was a great scope, and I can't say that I wouldn't own another one. But their glass is not great.
I just have this. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, the X5's up there with the top of them.
I felt like I just needed to be able to see the animal, like be able to differentiate horns from branches. Like it was a very low threshold of, you know, like just, I had to be able to visualize the animal. I know I'm picky, but I, you know.
Now the Huskama and scopes that I would actually own and use on one of my rifles, it's got the worst glass. It doesn't have the worst glass of any scope I've actually put on a rifle, but of ones that would stay on a rifle, it's got the worst. And the Collis, the ATAC R's, and the X5's have the best glass that I've used.
That ATAC R is surprisingly, and I'm not saying the NXS to me is like average glass. That ATAC R is good glass.
Yeah.
But, well, dude, we will let you get out of here. I tried to drop the long range only name enough, but where can people stalk you online?
Well, all my content goes to long range only. So if you want to watch me personally, it's going to be on long range only Instagram. I'm on the forum. If you got questions, I try as much as I can outside of my work and hunting to be involved on the forum. Jeff's on there almost every day if he's not out hunting, and Jeff is obviously an awesome source of information and help, and he would give you the shirt off his back. So the forum, and then obviously we do the YouTube channel. We try to get reviews out as often as we can. We might not always be the quickest to YouTube out of all the guys or girls doing reviews. But I won't put one out unless I've had time to use it and use it in a manner that I would actually use it in and feel like I can give you an honest opinion. So Instagram, YouTube, and the forum. And, you know, like I said, we're one of the second reasons I got into doing reviews in the first place. I got tired of the magazine guys going out and using something for an hour and then telling you that, you know, this is how they feel about it when they really have no clue. So we try our best to avoid it. You know, if I miss something that you wanted to see in a review, go hit me up on the forum, and we will either address it on the forum or we'll do a follow-up video. But that's absolutely where you can find us.